This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Just a quick scan of the TV dial these days in the days of 24/7 news coverage can leave you with the impression that the world is falling apart.
This is a Fox News alert. A dangerous situation in Florida. A woman has climbed up on a radio tower and is threatening to jump.
It was out of control, and there's no rewriting history. We have it on tape, period. We have on tape cops looting, New Orleans police officers looting Walmart, okay?
And now to a tragic discovery in Minnesota on a story we have been following. Hours ago, the body of 19-year-old Patrick Keisha was found in a river.
It says not only is there the hemorrhage in the petechia, but she admits to shaking the baby at one juncture.
Now to the nationwide manhunt for a dangerous killer. Melvin Keeling is wanted for rape and multiple murders. He is armed, dangerous, and he has been on the run.
Round-the-clock coverage of the world's traumas and disasters is hard enough to cope with if you're an adult. Imagine what our kids are going through. What happens when graphic reports reach children? How much do children really understand? We're talking today about how children process the news they see and hear and read and what parents can do to help them cope. And we welcome your phone calls this hour about your children, their response to news and information. What are you doing these days now that the trauma and disaster coverage seems to be never ending? Are you taking steps? Are you worried about what your children are seeing and hearing? Give us a call, 877-962-9862. You can talk with our guests in the studio today, John Fairbank, co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, located at the Duke and UCLA campus. Dr. Fairbank, welcome to the program.
Thank you for the invitation to be on your show, Frank.
And joining us by phone is Dr. Alvin Poussant, who is the director of the Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. Dr. Poussant, welcome.
Thank you.
Dr. Poussant, let me address the first question to you and ask about the way children process media in general, and I guess violent images in particular, and how that's different from adults.
Well, I think the violent images that you see on television and the violent news, particularly when accompanied by the visuals, seeing dead bodies, seeing the hurricane and the flooded houses, seeing the towers in New York collapse and so on, it really imprints itself on the brain and is much more anxiety-producing and is likely to produce stress, particularly when the images are watched over and over again. Particularly with younger children, they may actually feel that the danger is reoccurring. That is, you replay them, and they think it's another occurrence of that event. So that watching and listening to that type of media is very stressful to children, particularly young children, to the point that I think that parents should not allow their children to sit and have that type of material replayed. They should shield them from those types of events. And for older children, too much viewing is bad too, but they should at least process it by talking to the children about what their reactions are and dealing with their fears.
Well, Dr. Poussant, let me ask you about that, the first point that you made, and whether or not it means that we should shield children from seeing it at all, or is it the repetition that we ought to watch
for? Well, for younger children, I see it. I don't think they have to see it at all. I don't think that after 9/11, for instance, that children needed to watch those towers collapse because they couldn't understand. It was just violence and people dying and people jumping out of the window. And we know that after seeing it once, many children will react with a lot of stress, will have anxiety, may have nightmares over what they've seen, may wet the bed over what they've seen, may show regressive behavior and clinging behavior just because it's so terrifying, because children tend to personalize what they see, particularly violence, and it will threaten their own personal safety, even if it's happening far away from them. They may live in Nebraska and see the scene in New York, but they can't process that. And studies show that a lot of people, including children, who just watch those events, 9/11, over and over again on TV, suffered so much stress that some psychiatrists and psychologists were wondering whether people could develop post-traumatic stress disorder from just watching things on TV.
Well, I want to ask Dr.
violence and threats.
Dr. Dr. Fairbank about some of the symptoms. I mean, how we might know that this is troubling our children.
Well, I'd like to comment. The research confirms what Dr. Poussin is pointing out about the effects of repeated exposure to these, you know, very horrific events for children and for adults. One of the things that we know is that there have been some really terrific studies that Betty Pfefferbaum and her colleagues at the University of Oklahoma Medical Center have done following up the children and families in the aftermath of the bombing of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. Mm-hmm. And up to 2 years after, you know, repeated viewing of these, you know, traumatic event, of this traumatic event on TV, children would, you know, show symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And it was directly related to the amount of exposure that these children had. So it's pretty clear from the research that there is a strong relationship between the amount of viewing that children see and the level of distress that they have for quite a period afterwards.
And again, how is this going to show up? I know Dr. Poussin talked about some clinging behavior, maybe nightmares, that sort of thing. What other symptoms might we see?
Well, some of the things we want to take into account is child's development. So if we're talking about toddlers, you know, children who are, say, up to about 3 years of age, we would see perhaps some of the clingy type of behavior that Dr. Poussin pointed out, also disturbances in eating, sleeping, regression in toileting, those sorts of things. We also may see in some children tantrums, acting out, and in other kids we may see withdrawal, and they become a bit more socially isolated. As we start to look at preschool age children, because, you know, they are more involved in social groups beyond the family, we may see this affecting their relationships with other children, their play. Very often, people who work with traumatized children will look for changes in children's play and in their drawings. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing for parents to monitor. In school-age children, you know, just like with younger kids, we would look for changes in sleep patterns. They may describe specific nightmares that they have. They may be waking up in the middle of the night, that sort of thing. And we also may see changes in their eating habits and difficulties in school. And in teens, in adolescents, you might want to look for conflicts with parents, teachers, and other authority figures.
Yeah, you don't have to look for those with teens.
Right, but you may see changes.
That's going to increase. You may see changes. 877-962-9862. We're talking today about the effect of media coverage on children and young adults with my guest, Alvin Poussin, who's the director of Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. John Fairbank is co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, co-located at Duke and UCLA. Chaz is on the line from Raleigh. Hello, Chaz.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was just listening to you over the telephone, and I agree with everything that was just said. The thing that I think that we need to focus on as well is the media's responsibility in all of this. Our crime rate has dropped dramatically over the last 20 to 30 years, and yet we're reporting more crime than ever. And the children and young adults are all exposed to this, and adults as well, are all exposed to this, and they have the perception now that things are worse than ever, and they're actually better than they've been since the early 70s.
Are we getting John Fairbank? Thank you, Chaz.
Chaz, that's a good point. I think there is a role for the media industry, and as well as for parents, in terms of responsibility for children's exposure to these types of events through the media. It's not just television media, it's also print media. Some of the research shows that print media can also have an effect on children as well. And there's an organization called the International Society for Traumatic Stress Studies, which is international group of trauma clinicians and researchers. And a couple of years ago, they actually put out some guidelines, addressing this topic, and they recommended that media have both visual and verbal warnings when graphic traumatic imagery is to appear, and some stations are starting to do this.
But Dr. Prasad, assuming that the media may not necessarily respond or may not change its programming, what's the responsibility of us as parents and or other adults to help kids process that if they're going to see it at all?
Well, I think the media, because it goes for sensation and crime and violent events, actually overexposes the whole society to the levels of violence that may not be really true in terms of the reality, so that many people feel there's much more violence in society than actually there is because of media reports, and that sometimes this can lead to both fear in adults and fear in children. Adults may go out and start purchasing guns or being afraid to go outside because they hear so much crime news on TV. I don't think that's going to change much, but I agree. I know on some stations they're saying some of the images are too graphic and perhaps you shouldn't watch them and children should not be exposed to them, and I think that's a good thing. But I haven't seen a slowdown in the actual reporting of that type of news. So I think the parents really have a responsibility to know that usually on every nightly news broadcast at 6 o'clock, 11 o'clock news, there's going to be some type of violence.
We are going to continue this conversation about the media's effect on our children with John Fairbank of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress and Dr. Alvin Poussant, Director of Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston, and taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Our conversation continues. Support for the State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We live in a 24-hour news world, and we are paying a price. What price do our children pay for the luxury of having full-time news coverage when images and sounds of national sorrows and disaster filter to them? How do children cope with the coverage of our nation's tragedies, and what can parents do to protect them and help them cope? In the studio with us is John Fairbank, co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, located at Duke and UCLA campuses. On the phone is Dr. Alvin Poussant, director of the Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. And we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. How do you talk to your kids about what they see and hear on the news? And are you limiting what your kids see and hear? 877-962-9862. Dr. Prasad, is there a kind of a delayed reaction in how kids respond? Or I guess my question is, how immediately will we see some of the symptoms show up in our kids?
Well, if we're talking about, a national disaster like Katrina, an earthquake, the symptoms are usually going to show up immediately. That is, distress symptoms, a feeling of numbness, regressive behavior. And in the case of Katrina, something that needs to be emphasized is strong grief reactions that the children have because everyone suffered such major losses. They lost their homes, they lost their property, they lost all the kind of property, toys, and so on that were very important to them and their sense of identity. It was a complete uprooting of them and their families, their parents losing their jobs, etc., and even a sense of abandonment. So this is an extreme trauma, perhaps greater than they're watching the towers collapse after 911 on TV, that they were experiencing grief and loss as well as fear and danger for their own lives over a prolonged period of time, days, and then being transported out to shelters where they had to restart, if you can restart in a shelter, but still feeling entirely uprooted and not connected and not, children recover in part from violence they see because they still have stability of their home environment and the support of their parents. But in this situation, the parents themselves were so traumatized that I wonder how much they were able to give to their children during that time who needed so much support themselves.
Yes.
And this is why I think other people, mental health professionals, just people who of goodwill, and the schools need to step in to help to these children get a sense of stability and a sense that people care for them and so on. It's a time, I think, where they need, well, to put it kind of straightly, need a lot of hugs and a lot of support to help them feel they're getting back on their feet and a little bit of sense of normalcy. So I think Katrina was particularly unique in terms of the level of trauma.
Well, particularly for the victims themselves. But John Fairbank, what do we tell the, you know, our kids who may not have been directly involved? How do we bring that sense of stability back to them? What do we do? What do we say?
Well, I'm just thinking about, you know, the families here in North Carolina who, saw this unfold on the screens. And, you know, we have some children who have family living on the Gulf Coast, in New Orleans, in Houston, for Rita recently. And, children are going to be, just like their parents, are going to be very concerned about how their loved ones in these areas are doing. Young children in particular are also going to be worried about how this is going to affect them. Are they safe? And are their families here safe? And one of the things that parents can do that can be very helpful for children here who are watching these sorts of things on TV is to just be very frank and straightforward with them about whether or not they are at risk. And if the hurricane is coming into the Houston area or is coming into New Orleans, parents can let their children know that they are safe here, that what they are seeing is on TV, and that they are doing everything in their power to keep them safe.
We are talking about media coverage of disasters and violence and how we can help our kids cope. 877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation with John Fairbank of the National Center for Traumatic Stress here at Duke and Alvin Poussant, director of the Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. Stephen is on the line from Pittsburgh. Hello, Stephen.
Good morning. I'm a 60-year-old man who was sheltered from television back in the 50s. My mother only let us watch an hour a day, and I want to tell you about two images that got through nonetheless that are burned into my brain, and that's the films of the bomb going off, both the tests of the atom bomb and the Hiroshima bomb and people and buildings and everything just vaporizing. So 50 years later, it's still very clear. Likewise, the films of the Allied forces liberating the Nazi concentration camps, still there, very, very strongly. So I love your research. I'm a family therapist in Durham, and I love everything you said, but I just wanted to say they don't go away.
Right.
They don't go away at all.
Stephen, do you know how they've affected you or how they affect you even today?
Well, I knew in the sixth grade I was going to run for the woods when the bomb went off. I wasn't staying in the basement of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do much for my picture of authority because they were teaching us to turn away from the windows. I thought,
yeah.
Give me a break. And it's made me a peace activist and an anti-war activist. And it's made me tremendously concerned about the fate of people who are, genocidally attacked.
So. All right. Well, thank you for your call, Stephen. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Stephen, it sounds like this is John. One of the things that you're alluding to is that by watching, the footage of Katrina, it brought back these memories that you have when it sounded like you were, very young, maybe 5-6 years old, and traumatic reminders are, something that we, really need to pay attention to, and it's one of the things that parents should pay attention to. For their children, particularly if their kids have been through other traumatic events in their lives. So if a child sees something on TV that is particularly horrific and this child has been through, you know, one or more traumatic experiences, there's a good chance that there are aspects of that image on TV that will elicit, you know, vivid memories for that child. And it's really important for the parent to monitor how their child is doing in these circumstances.
Vivid memories, but if you listen to what Stephen said, some of those can be very instructive and help us in our development and develop a keener idea about the world around us. In other words, sheltering kids from every image, in Stephen's case, may have made him less active and interested in the world around him.
Well, I think the particular images he's referring to, the Hiroshima bombing and Nagasaki bombings, were so horrific that they kind of etched themselves on his brain. And that does happen. I've seen children and adults years after, particularly watching a traumatic events like violence or the murder of someone, particularly if it's a parent, where that memory sticks with them forever and may return in flashbacks. I think that type of situation, those individuals need to seek professional help and counseling. But it's also known that if they get a lot of help initially with their symptoms, that it may actually block later or attenuate any post-traumatic symptoms in the future. So I think it's important now in thinking about Katrina and those types of events that people move in to give a lot of support to the children in terms of their activities, in terms of people caring about them. And I think that would put them at less risk for these symptoms returning in flashbacks and they're developing PTSD symptoms.
Let's go to the phones. Judy is on the line from Carrboro. Hello, Judy.
Hello. I am a mother of a two-year-old. And I'm just at home here cleaning up, and I was listening to your program, and I listen to NPR quite often and the State of Things. But I found myself getting really annoyed with this program because I was like, this is a no-brainer. I mean, I'm not referring to the victims, like the kids who were actually in Hurricane Katrina or the kids who were around during September 11th, you know, those are all kids who have been exposed to, you know, trauma that they didn't have control over. But I'm just talking about kids at home being exposed to these images over and over and over again. And I'm just, like, flabbergasted. Like, do we really need research to tell us that exposure to this over and over again is not good for our kids? I mean, I just found myself just, it's like, for me, I was just like, yeah, and we also need to spend $2 million to tell us that if we exercise and eat right, we'll be healthy. Mm-hmm. And I may be really out of touch with our culture, but I just found myself being just very annoyed.
I think it's important because a lot of parents, believe it or not, do not realize that exposure over and over again to these images traumatize their children. Somehow they're thinking at the moment that children are like adults, or they just don't bother. They turn on a television and they just don't bother to make sure their children aren't there to watch. In many, many homes, the television set is on all day long. The children come home from school, they watch the news during dinner, and the parents are not cognizant of what this may be doing to them in terms of stress. And I think that's why we need reminders for parents that this is not a good thing, that children are not able to absorb it like perhaps they can absorb it, and that they have to be mindful of the special vulnerabilities of children. And often, sometimes, even after national tragedies, sometimes the last folks they get to are the children. It's only been in recent times that we're paying more and more attention to what the reactions and effects have been on the children in the community.
Thank you for your call, Judy. And I want to ask John Fairback, in terms of the particulars and treatment and therapy, has that been refined any since in this latest age of media coverage, which seems to be more around the clock than in Stephen's day when you had to turn on the news at 6 o'clock and you could watch it for 15 minutes at, 1959?
Well, the good news is that that most children, recover quite well, after viewing these sorts of things. And even children who have been in, directly exposed to these kinds of traumatic events. But there are children who continue to have problems over time, and that there have been a number of what we call evidence-based treatments for traumatic stress reactions that have been developed that are being tested and that are being disseminated to treatment providers in community settings throughout the United States. One of them is cognitive behavior therapy, trauma-focused cognitive behavior therapy. There are now well over a half dozen, randomly controlled trials that show its effectiveness for teens. Basically, what it does is it focuses on a number of the symptoms that the children experience who have not gotten over the effects of a traumatic event, particularly focusing on aspects of their beliefs about what this means about their safety, in their life, and also it focuses on the impact of the traumatic event itself by helping them develop a trauma narrative.
Let's go to Heather on the line from Snow Camp. Hello, Heather.
Hi, I'm calling because I worked for years in New York City for an organization that helped kids traumatized by war and violence, and I left New York after watching the World Trade Centers go down from my roof holding my baby, and came to North Carolina and bought a dairy farm, and we took television out of our house, and we're really careful about what our kids are exposed to and want them to know about the world but not be afraid of it. And now that my daughter's reaching the age of 5, she's really picking up things just on NPR, which is really the only thing that's coming into our house that she's hearing. And the other day we said we're going on a trip, and she said, is there going to be an earthquake there, or a hurricane, or a flood, or will there be a tornado? And, I'm so sad that she somehow is picking this up, understands it so much. And so we're trying to now not even listen to NPR when she's home. And there was even a story this morning, a sweet story, I think, on NPR about a family that has given their house over somewhere in New Hampshire or something to a Katrina victims. And my friend told me that her little 4-year-old turned to her and said, "I loved hearing that story, Mommy, because nobody got killed."
Mm.
So in any case, I do think the media has to be, I wish there was some special positive news program that kids could listen to, but I do think, as one of your speakers said, it's really important for us to be frank and reassuring to our children, but also really gentle in exposing them to the world. But I want them to know about the world.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for your call, Heather. It does raise some interesting challenges for parents. And a part of that, too, is look at parents through the ages. I mean, with or without electronic media, kids have been exposed to, they watch people die, they watch the animals die. I mean, parents have always had the problem of trying to create a sense of stability for kids in a very unstable and dangerous world.
The difference, though, is with TV and electronic media, they are literally bombarded with this type of violent types of material. And horrific type of material every day and over and over and over again, unlike before the TV era where, yes, pets died and you heard about some violence, people being killed in earthquakes, whatever, but it was not in such a high dose.
John?
And one thing I'd like to comment on the previous caller's comments about, her concern about her child being exposed to, these sorts of images, even when, they're working very hard to control what's coming into the house. And I think that the mom did a great job of listening very carefully to her child's concerns and, has really been able to identify what her child is concerned about, as they were preparing for this trip. And that was a great opportunity, which it sounds like she took, to talk with her child about, these issues related to safety and the child's actual risk.
Now, the first impulse, or you say the first thing we should do is listen carefully, listen to what's on the child's mind and not
Absolutely. Anticipate
or predict what it is that they're seeing or what scares them. Let them tell us. But then the second impulse might be to say, don't worry. Don't worry. Now, but really we have a reason to worry. So to what extent should we reassure beyond our ability to give that assurance?
Well, I think in addition to listening to their questions and giving them an opportunity to ask questions, we should also ask them, find out what their particular worries are. That is, what are they most afraid of? It could be they think a hurricane is going to hit in North Carolina. It could be that they fear they're going to be separated from the parents. In other words, the anxiety about the hurricane may symbolize other kinds of anxieties they're having about separation or fear or traveling to any part of the country. So I think we have to get a little bit deeper without, you know, probing to find out all of their concerns and even related concerns and talk to them about it and give them an opportunity to let it all out and then give them supportive types of explanations for it. So it's an opening into perhaps other kinds of issues and fears that they may have and anxieties they may have.
John
about
Fairbank?
The trip and about the safety.
Sure. Mm-hmm. John Fairbank?
Well, I agree. And, you know, I think one of the things we just want to keep in mind is, you know, as parents, and I'm a parent, and I know I've learned more often than not that what I'm worried about is not necessarily what my children are worried about. And so we don't want to assume that, you know, the things that we're particularly worried about in this situation are actually what our kids are concerned about. So listening and asking.
But in terms of reassurance, how far can we go in reassuring them about things that, frankly, we can't? I mean, you know, there may be a hurricane, and yes, you are going to die someday. And so all of those things, while we want to protect them from it, how far should we go?
Well,
in offering assurance?
You know, one of the callers, I think, you know, did a great job of summarizing what we should do, which is, you know, be frank, provide children with accurate information, but do it in a gentle way at a level that they can understand. You don't want to bombard them with information, and you don't want to give them information that they're not going to understand. So what you tell a 5-year-old will be very different than what you tell a 15-year-old.
We're going to continue this conversation, talking today about how children process the news, what parents can do to ease the trauma and help put it in perspective. Our guests are John Fairbank, co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress at Duke and UCLA. Dr. Alvin Poussant is the director of the Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. And we're taking more of your phone calls just ahead at 877-962-9862. On the state of things, stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking today about how children process the news, how they react to media images of devastation like the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, and what happens when your children are exposed to disaster coverage. How can parents ease the trauma and the images they cause? In the studio is John Fairbank, co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress, located at Duke and UCLA campuses. On the phone is Dr. Alvin Poussant, the director of the Media Center at the John Baker Children's Center in Boston. And we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. Let's get right to him. John is on the line from Burlington. Hello, John. John, are you there? We'll try to get John back on the line or move on to another phone call. I tell you what we can do. We can probably go right to Harris, who is a parent in Cary. Hello, Harris.
Hi, how are you doing?
Sure, we're fine.
Hey, I wanted to comment on the effect of all this, not just on children, but on parents. And there are really two comments that were made. One was a previous caller who talked about sort of the over-reporting. And then the other one is one of you just made a comment about having a reason to worry. And I think one of the problems I see is that we have this climate of fear created by the media because of this constant over-reporting. And I don't think there's any better example of that than the way in which we're constantly being warned as parents about our children being taken, missing children. You know, you see it on TV, you see it at Walmart. You know, my son sees the ads in the, you know, that show up in the mail. And it's sort of, I don't know, it seems like it's sort of created a climate of fear that you almost get the impression at times that the media wants us to worry and wants us to be afraid. Because what happens to me as a parent is I feel if I'm not watching one of my sons and something happens to him, it's my fault because I wasn't there. I wasn't watching, you know. Good example. I just took my 19-year-old off to college, and when they described his generation at the student orientation, the people doing the presentation said, "This is the most protected generation of kids that have ever come to college." So, you know, they talked about the baby boomers and the Generation X and all that, and I don't even remember what they call our kids. I think the millennial kids or something. But they said they're the most protected group of kids because they've never been any distance from their parents at all. And I think so much of this worry about our kids being taken, and so much of this is talked about and hyped up in the press, I think it creates a guilt and a fear among parents that's completely unreal.
Let's get a response to that. I appreciate the call, Harris. You know, is there something about this generation, about how we're working with our kids, and about the fact that our kids have been exposed to so much media, that makes them almost different to deal with? Does it throw some of the old research out the window, John Fairbank?
Well, it's I think there's a couple of points here that Harris raised that are, you know, really are key. One is that, you know, he mentioned that, you know, really the kind of how parents react to this and how the adults in children's lives react to, you know, this continuous 24/7 media exposure to trauma affects kids. You know, when we look at younger children, you know, particularly infants, toddlers, preschoolers, they take so many of their cues about how to respond, how to react from the adults in their lives, particularly their parents, to the extent that, you know, that we can model, you know, appropriately calm and confident behavior, that's going to help our kids be, you know, confident that they're going to be able to handle these kinds of situations.
Dr. Poussin, let me ask you a different question. How are the media images about natural disasters and news events different from video games and cartoons that project violence in a very different way in a kind of a fictional setting?
Well, it's fictional, but it has a big effect, and that's being studied and looked at much more. There's some suggestion that playing a lot of violent video games may make children more violent and more aggressive, or numb them to the reality of violence. You know, in a lot of these games, you get points for killing someone, and your score goes up for killing or mutilating someone, and you can use that, in fact, to teach soldiers how to use violence and to be comfortable using violence without it stirring up too much stress or anxiety in them so that they don't act. So I think a lot of people believe, but I would like to see more like concrete studies on children who in early age use a lot of violent video games on and on. We know that children who watch a lot of violence on TV sometimes become numb to it or actually begin to see it as fun because it's so glamorized, and will actually be in a movie theater and someone's head is blown off and they'll laugh. So there's a lot of glamorization of violence in our society. I personally believe that it contributes to the atmosphere of violence and that the effects are cumulative over time. It's not like they watch two or three programs, but after watching, you know, 18,000 murders on TV and God knows how many within the video games, that this is going to affect how they feel about how you resolve conflicts. And there's too many now people in our society who feel one of the ways you resolve conflict and the first order of business maybe in resolving conflict is to resort to violence. And I think that's unfortunate. I think that maybe if we can actually suppress a lot of this kind of attachment and glorification of violence, that maybe the entire atmosphere in the society will change and there'll be less violence.
Let's go to the
phones. I can't be certain of that.
Julie is on the line from Apex. Hello, Julie.
Hi. You were actually just talking about the point that I was going to bring up, but I want to take it a step further. We have the media just showing all sorts of violence all the time, and the worse the story, the more graphic the picture they can show, the better they like it on television. But we have to remember that they respond to the viewers. And if the viewers were turning them off, they would be changing what they were showing. I think the problem is not so much with the media, but with the parents, that our society is taking violence as entertainment. And it looks to me, with all of these reality shows, very much like the Romans going to the Colosseum and watching people be murdered in front of them. The worst thing we can watch, the better we like it. And the children are picking up on that, and they're traumatized by it.
That's a good point. Also, you know, there is a rating system on television saying children should not be exposed to certain program. But even more useful, but many people don't seem to know about it, is that in new TV sets there's a V chip. Now the V chip can be programmed to eliminate all violent programming on the television set so that your children can't tune into it. But very few parents know about the V-chip, and people fought very hard to get that V-chip in television sets that's been manufactured, I think early, late 90s or early 2000s, so that parents would have this capability. But the word has been difficult to get out, and apparently the television industry isn't broadcasting the fact that this V-chip is in new TV sets that you purchase and can be used by parents, and they should use it.
Very
That's
quickly,
why it's there.
I want to put one question to John Fairbank and ask if you think that the danger for children is that they will exhibit sort of behaviors, you know, that may be fearful, or is it that exposure to this might, as Dr. Poussin suggested, make them numb to violence and its impact?
Well, it could do that. It could numb them to the effects of exposure to violence. But I think one way of interpreting the many studies that have been done over the past 30 years or so on the effects of television violence on children is to conclude that it does increase aggressive behavior. And for, you know, preschool and school-aged children in particular, that's something for parents to be concerned about.
Well, we do have some of that good news coming up, and I'm sorry to say we're out of time here, but I want to thank you, John Fairbank, co-director of the National Center for Child Traumatic Stress at Duke and UCLA. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure to be here.
And thank you, Alvin Poussant, who's the director of the Media Center at the Judge Baker Children's Center in Boston. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.